Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the October 25, 2020 session, focusing on Matthew 22, verses 34 through 46, the greatest. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Crystal Shepherd.
And I'm Daniel Glaze.
Well, most of us don't like tests. I really am not a fan of them, whether they're in school or if they're a life test. They're not fun. But inevitably, we've all experienced them. And so I'm curious, what's the hardest test you've ever taken? And maybe most memorable is another way to put it, but life test or a real test?
I think for me, it's a tie between pretty much every theology test or church history test I had in seminary. And Dr. Medley and John Inscore Essek, this is a shout out to you all because those were stressful and they were probably the hardest tests I've ever had.
Yeah, students still say don't take a course from each of those at the same time.
And I did.
Oh.
Yeah, I had a really brilliant and wonderful Hebrew Bible professor who was notorious for wrecking students' GPAs. And Sam Ballantyne was so after taking two semesters of Hebrew, two semesters of Old Testament, I thought I can do this. So I took reading Psalms in Hebrew. And I can't tell you what else I studied that semester. It's all because that consumed my life. And it was, from every test, every exam, I never want to do that again. Have a little PTSD from that, I think.
You're sweating a little just talking about it.
Absolutely.
I probably have a tattoo. It would probably be either church history exams from Lloyd Allen in seminary, or you said life test. And I might be in it right now, and that's parenting a teenager. I have found that things that I find endearing in teenagers in a youth group are less endearing when you live with it every day. And so I'm currently being tested daily on these things.
It's so cute when it's other people's children.
It's right? So cute when it's other people's children. And like you. I used to always say, I love middle schoolers because I do. Gosh, I love being a youth minister to middle schoolers. I love them. And I am raising one right now. It's a very different experience.
Oh, blessings on you in this test.
What about you, David?
Well, okay. So I'm going to go academic test because finishing up a doctoral program meant comprehensive exams.
Ooh.
And it was 3 days of you have multiple hours in the morning and multiple hours in the afternoon of written tests, 3 days in a row. So you cram your eyeballs out, and then you go in there and you just regurgitate everything you've ever learned.
Wow.
It was amazingly terrifying, all the way up to doing it. But once I got in there, it was amazing because I was like, I could do this.
Oh.
And you just all this stuff would come out, and so you feel. I think part of it is it's a confidence boosting experience because it's almost like boot camp. You go through this hard experience and somehow you make it and you're like, hey, I could do that.
So
I don't want to do it again. Ever.
Fair.
Well, I hope you're not too tested in these days, but we do find ourselves in tests, and this passage has some interesting tests of its own for us. So Daniel, would you help us get started?
I'll be glad to. I guess it was about a month ago. One morning, I was outside on the patio enjoying my coffee when my wife came outside to tell me that the power had gone out. I hollered over to my neighbor, and sure enough, his electricity was out too. After calling the power company, I went back inside, opened all the blinds to let in as much light as possible. With my wife working from home and my kids enrolled in virtual school, there was nothing more we could do other than sit in the living room and enjoy one another's company. We talked about what the day ahead held for each of us, the things we were looking forward to, that sort of thing. And during a lull in the conversation, my youngest daughter says, "Wow, it's really quiet." When you're so used to the morning sounds of the hairdryer, the Today Show, cereal bowls clinking together in the sink, you really notice the quiet. The inverse is true as well. Hearing things over and over again sometimes causes our ears to be hardened to the sound, and we simply don't hear them anymore. Like people who buy a house near the airport eventually learn to sleep through the sounds of a plane landing in the middle of the night. Hearing certain scriptures over and over again can cause us not to hear them or listen to them as closely. It takes discipline, intentionality, to step back, slow down, and try to hear these popular scripture passages as if for the first time. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. That's the answer Jesus gives to the Pharisees and Sadducees' question about which commandment is the greatest. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets, Jesus says. In other words, do this, most everything else will fall into place. In the Torah, you can find 613 commandments from God. 248 are prescriptive, things God told us to do. 365 of them are prohibitive, things God tells us not to do. 613 laws in total, each carrying the full authority of God. Jesus boils it down to this: love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. Listeners, please do not let the simplicity of Jesus' answer deceive you. This is a difficult lesson. Well, part of it is, at least. In my opinion, loving God is the easy part. Loving other people, that's another matter entirely. Why do you suppose that is? Why is it so hard to love other people? Do we love our estranged family members? Do we love the children down at the border who've been separated from their parents? Do we love the children in our own communities who go to bed hungry every night? Do we love that annoying neighbor who works on his motorcycle on Saturday morning? Think about the person you're voting for whom you're voting for president. Now think about his opponent. Do you feel love for him? Ooh, it just got cold in here. Loving others is so hard sometimes. Please don't hear me say that I have any of this figured out. But I do know this. You cannot separate love for God and love for your neighbor. You can't love God and hate people. You just can't. It doesn't work. Probably because Jesus tells us that we meet God in the face of other people. Because Jesus placed so much importance on loving God and loving others, we probably ought to as well. Friends, this is our life calling. To learn how to love. To learn what it takes to connect with others, with our partners and families and communities and churches and humanity in a way that brings about God's shalom. And even though that sounds lofty and philosophical, it is not. Love is a daily, active, committed, sometimes costly engagement with God and God's children. I suppose that's why the good book also says, "And now these three abide, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love." That's a little background on our text for today.
Daniel, thank you for that introduction. You know, those words are hard. Like you said, they're really, really hard. And I'm just like thinking as I was listening to you and you're kind of like outlining, like, do you love this person? Do you love this person? Like you love God. And I think for me, I have to kind of like think about what love is. What does that mean? But also, as I was hearing you talk and when you're asking even about like in our voting, you know, do you love the opponent that is there? And I think about even how do we love our enemies or the people that we don't, those family members that rub us the wrong way. And as I was thinking about that, I thought sometimes the most loving thing we can do is leave someone alone. Sometimes the sometimes the most loving thing we can do, because it says to love your neighbor as yourself. If I love myself, is to set a boundary. And so I think it's kind of like in each case, kind of thinking about how can I love and what does love look like in this situation? How I love my children is going to be different than how I show the love that I have for my neighbor, is going to be different from how I show the love for the person who may be standing on the street corner screaming about whatever cause or whatever thing that they have. So I think, I mean, it's really challenging. Like I have this kind of like anxious pit in my stomach right now, kind of thinking about this. So I've never thought about this scripture that way before, because it's easier for us to just say, you know, love God, do all these things and love neighbor as yourself. You know, your neighbor as yourself. There you go. It's not easy. It's just not.
No. And I probably should have been clearer on something. You brought it up very well. Love does not mean being a doormat. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes the most loving thing to do is say, you know, I think I'm going to skip Thanksgiving with Uncle Ralph. Mm-hmm. And that's because I love myself and because somewhere deep down I do love Uncle Ralph and I don't want to punch him in the nose.
Right.
So I wholeheartedly agree. And I'm glad you brought that up.
Thanks.
Daniel, I'm glad you used that example. I'm going to latch on to what you said there at the end. You said, I do love myself and I love Uncle Ralph. And I have to give credit to my good friend and minister here in Atlanta, Christian Smith, for helping me with this passage. He's written a book about the greatest commandment, and it's what he does all of his ministry out of. And so he bases all of his ministry on this. And so listening to him and his ministry, he's helped me to see the passage in a unique way. And I think in the passage, loving self and loving God and loving neighbor go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And so what I mean by that is the way that we love our neighbor is how we love ourself. And the way that we love ourself is how we love our neighbor. And so in your example, choosing to put that boundary between you and Uncle Ralph is loving yourself. And it's also loving Uncle Ralph, because you know that to come together, there would be unloving experiences.
Yeah.
Or the risk of that is very, very high. But I think it's really, so like on that individual level, I think it can be kind of easy to work out. Okay, what's the most loving thing in this situation? I think it gets more complicated when we think about not just the person that we vote for in the booth, but what they represent and what that means for how we end up loving all of our neighbors who are around us, right? So is the way that I want to see things happen after the vote happens, does that increase the love of my neighbors, therefore increasing love for myself and for God, or is it less loving? And certainly all of those things are up for conversation and that kind of thing. But I think it's a good, it helps me to think about it in that way. And that when I do loving actions for my neighbor, I am loving myself. Mm-hmm. And I think it helps to think about those things that they all go together and they impact each other.
Right. Absolutely. And I think Jesus is clear in that elsewhere in Matthew, just 3 chapters later, he'll say, you know, what you do for your neighbor, especially the neighbor who is sick, poor, hungry,
right.
in prison, etc. You do that for me.
Right.
So it's, I mean, you pull, it's like once the cake is baked, you cannot pull those ingredients
right.
back
right.
out.
Right. Yes.
And yeah. Yeah.
When we think about it in those ways, our actions to and for and with other people directly tell us something about how we love ourselves. If we act in ways that are unloving to someone else, it might be helpful to think about how we're loving ourselves. And like, how does those actions that are unloving to another person impact us?
Mm. So can you say that again? The way yeah. we love or treat others reveals how we love and treat
ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, that. I think that's right. Is that what you said, Nikki?
Yeah, that's what I, okay. yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's what we teach our children, you know, that bullying's not okay, but you know, when someone is that ugly to another person, there is something going on in that person's life,
mm-hmm.
whether
right.
it's unrealized trauma or whatever,
right.
That is causing them to act out in those ways. I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it reveals how we love God.
Mm-hmm.
It tells us something, our love for other people, our love to with other people says something about how well we love God.
Mm.
For me, this teaching falls in that realm of teaching of Jesus that is simple and sometimes feels impossible.
Yep.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's simple. It's a very simple concept. But enacting it is so very, yeah. very powerful.
So very, very difficult. Simple.
Yes. Yeah. Deceptively simple. That's yeah. a good way to put it. Yeah.
Because it's, yeah. And I'm not trying to be funny, but it helps me to remember that loving everyone does not mean liking everyone.
Indeed.
Yes.
Amen.
And just because I may love my enemies, but I don't need to go apple picking on weekend with them either.
That's right.
You know, we can love each other from afar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and Jesus didn't say we have to be buddies.
That's right. That's right. Which helps me think about love as not a feeling, but a choice and an action.
Mm.
Right? I think because, I mean, if you talk to people who are married, right? Oh, I love my spouse, but today I don't like them. Right? Like, I'm just going to take a little space. Loving in a spousal relationship is often a choice, a daily choice. And
or
I think
parenting teenagers.
Yes.
Or parenting teenagers.
There it
absolutely.
Comes.
Absolutely. Yes. Choosing love every day on that one right now. But I think that when we understand that we don't have to feel love, we have to do love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's helpful to ask ourselves the question, how are we doing love? And mm-hmm. and especially, like, I think it's really easy. I almost think it might be easier to see how are we doing love or not doing love to our neighbor. But if you go back where it talks about loving God with pretty much all that you are, I mean, y'all talking about it being easy, you know.
Simple.
Yeah, simple. Sorry, not easy.
Not easy.
But I mean, I'm just like, okay, if I've got to love God with all that I am, that's definitely not going to be easy. And I don't even know if it's simple because,
oh, that's good.
We're
yeah.
flawed. And, you know, and there are times that, you know, I mean, let's be honest. We want to blame God. We want to yell at God. I've had those times in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we know that God's not causing these things, we still like throw all of that at God, kind of like a teenager throws at a parent, right? Like, I mean, so to say that I am trying to love God with all that I am, I think that that's like, I need to be thinking about how am I doing that? And how does that translate, like you said, Nikki, to how I'm loving my neighbor, how I'm loving myself?
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I don't think you can separate those out. But I think we need to be asking ourselves that question. How am I doing this?
That made me think of two things. One, and I don't think this is what you said exactly, but I think it's important to say that being angry with God doesn't mean not loving God. Because we can be angry with people that we love. Mm-hmm. And we can be angry in a relationship with somebody that we love and care about. And working that out is part of that relationship. But you said asking ourselves how we love. The story of Peter after Jesus is resurrected came to mind. And Jesus says, do you love my people? Or do you love me, Peter? Then feed my sheep. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus there, after he's resurrected, connects caring for Jesus's sheep, loving Jesus's sheep, as a way of loving Jesus. So even there, it gets connected. Yeah. Anyway, that's what it made me think of.
So one of the techniques, that I was taught in creativity training was around when you're dealing with something that seems obvious or familiar and it's hard to wrap your head around, coming at it from the opposite can be a helpful way.
Mm.
So as harsh as it is, we probably have a much easier path when we talk about, well, what does it mean to hate others?
Ooh.
Or to act in ways that show hate or hatred? Because we can picture that, right?
Yeah. That
means devaluing another. That probably means lumping someone in a group that we can tarnish, that we can put the bad light on. It means seeing people in their worst light or taking a particular negative and putting it on a group. It's almost always a group of people, right? But it can also be individuals. But we know how to hate pretty well. Mm-hmm. And we even talk about, there's a phrase, what, hate groups? There are,
right.
You could be part of a hate group. Wouldn't it be great if we could see the church as love groups, you know, as groups that practice love in the same way that we know there are groups that practice hate? I don't know. But maybe thinking about it from that perspective gives us some insight to what love is really about.
David doesn't say a lot, but when he does.
I know.
Right?
I was like, jeez. You better say it, preacher. Come on.
I mean, I said like 10 times the number of words he did, but he said so much better. I hear in my mind, like, hate your neighbor as you hate yourself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, ooh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy, we know how to do that.
We do. We do.
Hmm. Yeah. And the hopeful word is that we are called as a people, as a church, as a people of faith, to build communities of love that act and practice love.
Mm.
And I think that leads to, inescapably, to this notion that the reason God loves is because God values us. And it's that valuing because that's why we can put up with teenagers, because we value them at the end of the day.
My teenager has a lot of value in my life.
See, that's right.
A lot.
And you will put up with a lot.
A lot.
To raise them well.
Yes, yes.
And,
no, not
and
really.
That,
she's good.
That willingness to put up with stuff is a value.
Mm, that's beautiful. So I thought to myself, well, gosh, God values humanity a lot. Mm-hmm. If we are willing to put up with a lot based on how we value another, right? And so, what a gift to think about in those terms and understand that God values us that much.
Mm.
That's powerful to think, to put it in those terms. And how can I value myself and my neighbor?
Mm.
All of my neighbors. I think that kind of answers Crystal's question about looking at how we love.
Yeah.
Putting value on it is helpful.
Well, what would the world look like if before any of our actions, we looked at what value are we putting on this person or this situation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that would it would keep us from that like knee jerk reaction that so many of us have. That I think that's where not all, but I think a good portion of our the hatred and the not loving people comes from is this like this reaction that we have, and we don't take a step back to say, to see the value in that other person, to see the mm-hmm. value in that relationship. We're as a society, and especially with, you know, all the stuff that comes at us all the time, we're kind of taught to consume and to just kind of like cycle mm-hmm. through things. And that's not valuing. And so we have that mindset, I think, a lot of times when it comes to actually people. I've definitely seen that in different experiences and in the church. I've seen it in the church. And I think the church mm-hmm. needs to take a long, hard look at itself and to realize where do we place value? And is it in the right spots? Are mm-hmm. we valuing things that are nothing more than idols? Done preaching.
And principles. we can come up with a list of things one should believe and make those our idols, right? As opposed to showing a list of photos of people we should mm-hmm. love.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of these things that's easier said than done, as we have mentioned. but perhaps some of the giants of spiritual formation, of spirituality, our mystic friends, perhaps can give us a little bit of insight and even poetry for these thoughts. So, of course, we turn to Thomas Merton.
Can't go wrong.
Who said? No, you really can't go wrong. Well, you can go wrong because it's very challenging. But,
well, there you go.
but yeah. And he said, our job is to love others without stopping to inquire whether or not they are worthy. That is not our business. And in fact, it is nobody's business. What we are asked to do is to love. And this love itself will render both ourselves and our neighbors worthy. May we value all those whom God has created. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.